Hey there, it's Kaysunga, and I have a really cool announcement for y'all. Headspace is now offering mental health coaching in the Headspace app. You can connect with a trained expert for live, text-based one-on-one support on your time from anywhere. Whether they're helping you cope with daily stress and anxiety or supporting you through big life events like loss or relationship hurdles, your coach will draw from clinically validated tools to help you reach any mental health goals. You can text a mental health coach for just $99.99 a month. Just sign up on the Headspace app or at headspace.com/coaching.
So she called me and she said, if you don't tell Debbie, I will, because this has got to come to an end. So that's how I did. She was in the kitchen and I said, I need to talk to you about something. And she said, what? And I said, I'm having an affair.
From Headspace Studios, I'm Katherine Schwarzenegger-Pratt. This is The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. On this show, we're telling people's stories as truthfully as possible. Sometimes you might feel uncomfortable or anxious. If that happens, I encourage you to pause and take some deep breaths. Today, you'll hear a conversation that I had with Ron Hall. In addition to being a husband, father, and author, Ron is an international art dealer, philanthropist, and movie producer. He founded the Same Kind Foundation, which aims to help the homeless get back on their feet. He spent the last several years traveling across the country, telling his life story of being on the receiving end of forgiveness with his late wife, Debbie. After 18 years of marriage to his wife, Ron had an affair. He figured this affair would surely end things in their marriage, but what he didn't expect was to receive Christ-like forgiveness from his wife. That forgiveness allowed them to start over and build a stronger foundation for their marriage than ever before. I love Ron's story because it's not only a story on forgiveness, but it's also a story about the ripple effects that someone's ability to forgive can have on those around them. This is a story of love, reconciliation, change, friendship, and heart. Ron started by telling me how he met his wife, Debbie Short, when they were in college together at Texas Christian University.
I want to start just mainly talking about how you and Debbie first met and how that led to you guys getting married.
Oh, all right. Well, we were both students at TCU back in the mid-60s, and I saw this beautiful, tall, elegant girl walking across campus one day, and she had on a Air Force ROTC uniform. Her name tag said Short, and I thought, that's odd. Such a tall, beautiful girl would be called Short. So I just kind of kept my eye on her, and then a few days later, I saw her walking in the student center, and I said, ooh, see that girl over there? That's who I'd like to have a date with. And my friend said, well, come on over here. He went over and grabbed her hand, and he said, Ron wants to ask you for a date. And she looked at me, and she said, well, if he wants to ask me for a date, then he should find out my phone number and give me a call.
I love that.
So she gave me her phone number and I gave her a call and we went on a date. A week later, she said, oh, I'm going back with my old boyfriend, but it was really nice knowing you. So she went back with her old boyfriend and we kept a friendship alive for a few months until they broke up. And so then I started dating her and I ended up getting drafted right out of TCU and went into the Army because Uncle Sam thought that my grades indicated that I would be a better soldier than I was as a scholar. I spent 2 years in the military and we had written a few letters back and forth when I was in the Army. When I came back, I gave her a call and I said, hey, will you want to go on a date? And she said, well, I'm a whole lot cuter than I used to be and I have no boyfriend now. And I said,
oh, I love that.
I said, okay. So we went out and we dated probably 6 months and got married.
What were the early days of your guys' marriage and goals that you guys had for one another early on in your marriage?
Well, the goal in our relationship early on in our marriage, I was fresh out of the military and Debbie was a school teacher. Our goal for our marriage was to have the most fun we could have. And if we found a good job and could afford our habits, then that would be fun. We really just were all about fun. We were young. We were 24 years old. I had really no ambition other than not to be poor. I had grown up in a family that we were so poor, I said we couldn't even pay attention. So I had gone to TCU where I heard all the rich girls were, and my intention was to marry a rich girl. It worked out that I married a poor girl who made my life rich. You know, we were just so full of passion. We didn't talk about, we're going to have children, or we're going to, it was just, we were just young and in love.
5 years into their marriage, Ron had found success as an art dealer. He and Debbie chose to start a family and ended up adopting their first child. They figured they'd had their fun and now they were ready to take on the responsibility of having a family. They also felt they were craving some spiritual guidance on this new journey, so they started going to a Christian church.
And Debbie took it very seriously, and I took it just as, I hate to say this, but becoming a believer and a Christian to me was just a safe place that I had fire insurance. I'd say I wanted to honor God, do great things, but I wasn't really sold out like Debbie. She became a God chaser. And as I was rising the ladder of success as an international art dealer, I began to chase money more than God. And so our paths were going on a 180-degree opposite direction. We ended up having another adopted child. So she was being a stay-home mom with two kids, and I was traveling the world, which I was kind of a little bit resentful. But I had an office in Paris and was an art dealer dealing a lot in Europe, and I was going back and forth to Europe all the time and just felt, I wish she would go with me. And about once a year she would, but her commitment was really to raising our children, and they have turned out to be great kids. So I cannot fault anything that she did as a mom.
After 18 years together, Ron was ready to give up on their marriage.
I wasn't sure that I even wanted to stay in the marriage. You know, once you lose the intimacy of a marriage and you just have kids and the only reason you're staying is for the kids, it's hard to save it from that point because there's just so much animosity between the two. She didn't like me anymore the way I was as some guy that was out chasing money. She had no idea of the women. But she didn't like me as being a money chaser. As her chasing God and me chasing money, I was traveling, and one time I was in California, and I was the first time in my life I had made $1 million in 1 month. And so I decided to reward myself, I guess. I was feeling a little cocky and been to an art opening at an art fair and having a few cocktails and met a beautiful young artist who wanted me to represent her. And, you know, it took a direction that it should not have taken. And that's kind of how that happened. And I, you know, obviously I felt guilty about it because I'd been married 18 years and have two kids, but it's not something that I planned on continuing. And it wasn't something I planned on ever telling anybody.
And what was that like when you confessed to Debbie about your affair?
I couldn't imagine her forgiving me. And I had gone to my lawyer to tell him what was going on and ask for some advice. I wouldn't dare go to my pastor and tell him I was having an affair. I was a deacon of the church. So I went to my lawyer and told him what I was doing. He could not believe it. It was shocking to him that I was, but I just needed somebody to talk to because I thought maybe I might be looking at a divorce, and should I be protecting myself in the case I'm going to be getting a divorce, and what should I be thinking about? How does all this work? He was so shocked that I was having an affair. Come to find out a few days later, without telling me, he had an affair, and his wife caught him. And he said, well, you shouldn't think so badly about me. The guy you think is the biggest hero and the nicest guy you know is also having an affair. So she called me and she said, my husband told me what you're doing. And she said, I cannot believe that. I am so disappointed. But let me say this. If you don't tell Debbie, I will, because this has got to come to an end. And mm-hmm. I said, you know, I thank you for calling me. And I'm going to leave my art gallery right now. And I'll go home and tell Debbie, because I guess it needs to come to an end. That's how I did. She was in the kitchen getting ready to prepare an evening meal like she always did, because she was a gourmet cook. And I said, I need to talk to you about something. And she said, what? And I said, I'm having an affair.
Wow.
She had a cup in her hand, and she threw it at me. And I ducked, and it missed, and it hit an Andy Warhol print that was hanging in the thing. And I thought, whoa, she was mad. She started throwing things. She was screaming her head off. How could you do this? I don't understand. How can you do this? We have two kids. You know, we have a life together. I said, no, we don't have a life together. That's the problem. We don't have a life together. And I was kind of kicked out of the house. I was contemplating leaving and packing up, and where am I going to go, and what am I going to do? You know, because it didn't look like I was going to be able to stay in this relationship. And then she walked in to see me, and she said, what's your name? And I told her. She said, I want to talk to her. And I said, whoa, okay. So I showed her name on my cell phone, and I said, dial her number. So she dialed the number, and she said, hi, I'm Debbie Hall. I'm Ron's wife. And hold on, don't hang up. But I want you to know that I forgive you. But I wish you well, and I hope you find someone that will love you as much as Ron and I used to love each other, because you must be a really good person. And she looked at me and she said, do you want to stay or go? I said, I'll stay. She'd say, and I want you to speak your heart to me. I really want to know your heart, because, you know, I know you. You're an art dealer, and you're, you know, you like horses, and you're kind of a cowboy, but I don't really know you. I just know about you like a friend knows you about you. She said, but would you just speak your heart to me? And you can even say, I hate this woman that I'm praying with. I can handle that. But I can't handle not knowing who you are. So we began praying our hearts, whatever was on our hearts, every morning together.
Ron says that Debbie promised to never bring up his affair again, as long as he renewed and strengthened his commitment to her and their family. He describes her forgiveness as immediate, something only a person of deep faith and trust could do. But because it happened so quickly, Ron was constantly waiting for the other shoe to drop.
You know, I was thinking all along, this couldn't be real. I'm sure that, you know, this is a really good thing to say tonight, but in the morning, she's going to be beating me over the head with this. And am I really prepared to stay if she beats me over the head? Or am I going to accept this forgiveness and be the best husband I can be and never do that again?
Right.
And so I was conflicted. But I'd say by noon the next day, when she didn't bring it up the next morning, and she said, can we have lunch together and all these things? I said, oh, wow. She was so nice. And I was just thinking, she's got to be hurting. This woman has got to be dying inside. But she could win an Academy Award because she is acting like she loves me and has forgiven me. It's like I've done nothing. And how could this be? So I just couldn't grasp it. And I kept expecting every moment that another coffee mug would come flying at me and bust off my forehead or something, but it never did. I had such guilt about what I had done that I couldn't forgive myself. So it took me a long time. It probably took me maybe 2 years, because anytime that maybe something wasn't quite going right in our marriage, I thought, oh, she's going to bring this up. It's going to resurface, because you just can't hold this in so long. But it never did. She just blessed me and loved me and loved me until she blessed the hell right out of me to where I would have never thought about doing that again. I was so happy.
We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, this series is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com. In 1998, Debbie was diagnosed with colon cancer. She battled the disease for almost 2 years until she was brought to hospice care. There, Ron and their two children shared intimate moments with their mother before she passed away.
She'd had cancer for 19 months. The doctors had told her she would probably just had a few days at the most to live. We were talking with our children. We all sat on her bed. And she said, I wanted you to know that I'm releasing your father right now to date and marry anyone that he chooses and as soon as he chooses. So I want you children to honor that request of mine. And so she said, and now I want you children to leave the room. I have something I have to say to your father. And so children... it's hard. Our children left the room. And she put her arms around me and she said, and I was holding her, all probably 75 pounds over. It was a horrible thing. She looked at me with her beautiful eyes and she said, even her. I said, no, Debbie, no, don't say that. She said, no, God's going to take me. And but I want you to know you have that freedom, even her. And I said, no, but Debbie, I'm so sorry I ever did that. She said, no, Ron, it was a good thing. Look at how it changed the trajectory of our marriage. We were totally going in opposite directions. And that brought us together in the closest, most beautiful 12 years that anyone could ever experience in a marriage. She said, you were the most wonderful husband. We would have never been this close. Life would have never been this beautiful had we had not had that bump in the road.
I wonder when you reflect on those moments, how you think she was able to forgive you.
Well, Debbie was a God chaser. She wanted everything God had to offer her. Knowing truly how to forgive someone and how to be forgiven and showing grace and mercy, she was well grounded in the word of God. And she just wanted to be an example for other women.
For many couples, infidelity is a hard line. And after it's been crossed, the relationship is no longer repairable. It can feel impossible to build a life with someone who has betrayed your trust on that level. While forgiveness might be practiced, the trust is simply too broken to make a relationship work. The other way some couples deal with infidelity is by deciding together to repair what's been broken. For Ron and Debbie, this led to incredibly tough, deep conversations between the two of them, and resulted in a bond that was even stronger than before.
What sort of advice do you have for couples or people who might be in a similar situation who are struggling with infidelity in general?
Well, from someone that is experienced in that, I would say avoid it if all possibility. It has no great lasting benefits. It's all very temporal. So run as fast as you can, but if you happen to get caught up in it, just stop and consider who all in the world is going to be impacted by this. It's so far-reaching. And I did not have to experience that because my parents didn't know, and Debbie's parents didn't know, and my children didn't know. And so I'm thankful for that. But I can say that it made our life so beautiful to have a woman that I knew loved me and forgave me. It's life-changing. What we had would have been an average marriage. And I need to remind the people that just because you're forgiven, you still have to do your part and make the change so that you don't mess up again. Because just because you're forgiven doesn't mean you're going to change. And marriages that don't really make it through the forgiveness, it's because the people were not willing to change to be able to be the person the other person needed. And that forgiveness and that coming together after a crisis was the most beautiful time in our lives. And it was just extraordinary. People used to come up to us and just say, "We don't know y'all, but y'all look just so much in love. And what is going on here?" We'd say, "Well, we really love each other." She never went in the door that I didn't open for her. She never got in the car that I didn't open the door for her. And we just honored each other with things that we knew the other would appreciate. We were selfless in our last 10 years together.
Ron's life was forever changed by Debbie's choice to forgive and the level of selflessness he learned from her during their time together. One of my favorite parts of this story is the ripple effect that Debbie's forgiveness had. Just as Debbie had chosen to bless the hell out of Ron to reconcile with him, he later chose in life to do the same with his 88-year-old estranged father, a man he says had a lot of hell in him.
I struggle with the fact that it took me so long that I missed an opportunity to really know my father. I mean, I had such animosity and dislike for my father because when he came home from World War II, he came home as an alcoholic with wounds, deep, deep wounds that you don't win a Purple Heart for, and that people didn't understand back then. And I had no idea why, but he never wanted to talk about it.
How do you think that your dislike of your father shaped who you were and who you became?
Honestly, it made me want to be nothing like my father, or the father that I knew and perceived him to be. I never let him have a chance, I guess, to be a father because he just said, I always thought I was better than him from the time I was even old enough to sing in a talent show. And he didn't come see me because he was at the bar. My mama was always there, but never my daddy. I just wanted to be nothing like him. I wanted to be the best father I could be, to spend all the time that I could with my kids, never miss anything that they had going on. I didn't care if it was open house at a school or being in a play or a soccer game. And, you know, I would stay up doing homework with them and doing school projects. But I was a great, great father in doing all those kinds of things. And I was driven by the fact that I never had a father that did that for me. And I wanted to be something that he wasn't.
It wasn't until 2006 that Ron decided it was time for him to confront his father about their troubled past. He invited him to his Texas ranch to talk and have a drink, a gesture he never would have entertained in previous years.
I was so full of pride. I mean, I drank and drink wine and have cocktails with friends, but my father, I would never have a drink with my father. I would never have a glass of wine with my father. My hatred for him was the fact that he spent his life with his drinking buddies and never with our family. I took him to the ranch, and we sat there, and we had a glass of wine together on the patio. And I just started asking him questions, and he would tell me an answer, and it was a beautiful something. It started off about World War II and his role as a soldier. I said, "Dad, you never told me these things." He says, "Son, you never asked." And I just kept thinking, and I'd ask him another question. It was something that was so spectacular that how could anyone have lived his whole life to be 88 years old when we were having this meeting and never had shared that with anyone? He was too ashamed of having killed people in the war as a rifleman, because he was kind of a pacifist that went to war for the good of the country and was given a rifle and told to shoot, and he did. And it was something he never was able to forgive himself for that.
Wow.
His heart just poured out to me. He wanted to protect me from knowing these things about him. He thought I would have been ashamed of a father who had killed somebody, or in a father that drank to drown that. He was able to talk about it, and I was able to forgive him, and for the first time to see his side of the story. He was a hero that should have been honored, greatly honored. His whole life, I should have been honoring him as a hero who defended our country as a 17-year-old boy signing up to go defend our country in World War II. And I never once honored him for that.
I imagine that you also went to a place of having compassion and empathy for your father at that moment.
Oh, so much. He grew up poor, very, very, very poor. He started working at 7 years old in the 7-Up bottling plant washing bottles. He got 10 cents a thousand or something like that. He would work all day long washing thousands of bottles for a dollar. And as it turns out, my father grew up without a father. My father never knew his father. In fact, was not allowed to ask if he had a father. His mother, when he would say, "Do I have a dad?" she'd say, "No, you don't. We don't talk about it." He just disappeared. By the time my father was born, he was long gone and never to be heard from or seen again. So my father grew up being raised by his mother and two old aunts. He never knew a father, didn't know what a father was supposed to be. And I don't know. He was easy to forgive at that point. And it was right there that I knew I had been wrong for my whole life, for never trying to get involved with him.
In many ways, forgiveness is the act of being open-minded and compassionate, even when you have reason not to be. It's in these moments of empathy that we're able to see people outside of the hurt that they've caused us and see them for who they are, people. Someone who may not necessarily have intended to cause you harm and may have acted out of their own pain and hurt. After experiencing this level of empathy, Ron was inspired to start working on a new book about how Debbie's forgiveness lived on in him and allowed him to reconcile with his father.
I still live with it. I still live with that. But writing this book has really helped me, go back and realize that I was as much to blame in it as he was, because I just never showed him any love either. And I accept that. It was hard for me because I knew that I had waited way too long, that I missed some really beautiful years with my father. But anyway, mm-hmm. I'm glad I had the last ones.
Thank you so much to Ron Hall for sharing his story, and to Debbie up in heaven for making our conversation possible. You can find Ron's book, Same Kind of Different as Me, and the other books he's written wherever books are sold. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness and meditation content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Katherine Schwarzenegger Pratt. You can find my book, The Gift of Forgiveness, wherever books are sold. This episode is produced by Monique Laborde and Otis Gray. Sound design by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway. This podcast is produced in partnership with Cadence 13.